time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dajon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness. Good morning on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Dajon Hughes. We're getting ready to talk another hour's worth of what's happening around the state of Michigan in the sports realm, and sometimes even outside of it, because there's only so much to dive into. But it's going to be another great weekend. There's tons to dive into, starting with our Tigers, who have been off to, well, they're getting back to their shape, but some things don't necessarily change. A lot of shakeup coming up this past week, some good, some bad, and we'll get into all of it. I mean, NBA draft, UFC, Michigan State updates, WNBA, NBA, NHL finals updates, University of Michigan updates, and of course, our picks at the end of the show. I'm really excited for more sports action. I'm feeling great going into this Juneteenth weekend, another celebration for the people as we continue to celebrate what it is to be an American and have our freedoms as everybody in the country gets to live a life that, they want to live. But also, I mean, the sports action's at an all-time high. I'm coming off another lacrosse weekend, had a tournament last weekend, didn't go quite the way we wanted it to, but sometimes that happens. We are 4-5 on the summer, so we're still doing okay. We just have to continue to get back in the lab and work to get better. That's what the next 6 practices are all about. We have 3 more before our next tournament, so I'm really pumped and excited to dive into more work with them. Obviously, really excited for the bye week for professional lacrosse to be over so I can have some lacrosse to watch this weekend. I'm always pumped to sit down and watch some stick and ball play. And then it's just a normal week, man. I made it through another week, and so have you. So I want to congratulate you on that and get into what we really came here for. That's all of the action that's happening all over the sports in the Michigan area, the Mitten, as we call it. And there's a lot of madness to get into. We're going to start with our Detroit Tigers, where we always start our standings in the MLB. In the Central, the White Sox are still atop of the division, but they are now tied with the Cleveland Guardians. The White Sox are 38-34. The Guardians are 39-35. 4.5 games back are the Twins, 35-40. 9 games back are the Tigers at 30-44. And then the Royals are 9.5 games back at 30-45. In the league overall, the Yankees lead the American League at 45-27. The Tampa Bay Rays have now fallen 3.5 games behind them, 41-30. Then the White Sox and Guardians, both 7 games back from the lead. And then the Mariners rounding out the top 5, 38-37 at 8.5 games back. The Tigers are 3rd from the bottom. It's the Angels and the Royals, both a half game behind them at 30-45, 16.5 games from the lead. Tigers only 16 games behind. The Red Sox right above them, 15.5 games behind at 29-42. And then the Astros, 35-41, are 12 games behind the league-leading Yankees. And that is the bottom 5 of the American League. Overall, the entire MLB, no surprise, the Dodgers are at the top at 48-27. 1 game behind are both the Brewers and the Braves at 45-26, 46-27, respectively. Then the Yankees, 1.5 back, and the Tampa Bay Rays are 5 games back, sitting in that 5th spot. Tigers are 4th from the bottom in the entire MLB at the moment, 17.5 games back from the major league leader in the Dodgers. The Royals, Angels, and Rockies all below the Tigers, 18 games behind for the Royals and Angels and 20 games behind for the Rockies. So the Tigers still kind of getting the struggle bus going, but there is definitely a window open for them in the batting average category. Riley Green, .295. His on-base percentage is a .384. Slugging percentage, .444. Dylan Dingler still leads the team in home run jacks and in RBIs. He's got 16 homers on the year. He's batting a .255, and he's brought in 51 runs on the year. Overlooking at the pitching category, Framber Valdez still leading the ERA at 4.09, 3 wins, 67 strikeouts for him. Brent Herter, he's got 4 wins on the year, his ERA 2.84, and his strikeouts sitting at 18. Meanwhile, Jack Flaherty has 1 win on the year, ERA still a 5.35, but he leads the squad in strikeouts with 78. The team stats, they had 301 runs, which tied for 24th. Batting average of .233 is 25th. On-base percentage of .313 is 23rd. And slugging percentage of .392 is 19th. On the pitching side, the earned run average of 3.90 is good for 9th. Quality starts of 26 is good for 10th. The whip of 1.28 is good for 15th. And their opponent's batting average of .242 is 17th. In the league, pitching stats still looking very good, but the batting stats did drop once again, and I'll be able to tell you why that is in just a moment, because there have been a couple of significant injuries. And other news, outfielder Wenzel Perez was injured in the training room as a freak accident when he was hit in the face by a resistance band in the training room following Tuesday's game against the Houston Astros. He was working with a therapy band, and it snapped off the hook where it was connected and hit him just below the left eye. Manager A.J. Hinch told reporters, "We have a battery of tests to check out his face, his eye. We're pretty concerned about it." Perez has played 53 games this year. He's only batting a .180 with 7 home runs and 17 RBIs. Here's more on the Gleyber Torres situation, who left Wednesday's 4-2 loss to Houston. He was placed on the 10-day IL, retroactive to June 15th because of an oblique strain. He's hitting 2.80 with 4 homers and 18 RBIs this season. Before the game, Detroit reinstated right-hander Casey Mize from the injured list and put him on the mound. 3 runs and 6 hits over 4 2/3 innings in the loss. Even though there's been some injuries there, as Detroit Tigers pitcher Jack Flaherty has also been placed on the 15-day injured list after leaving Friday night's game against Cleveland because of left leg discomfort. Not this Friday, but last Friday, by the way. Flaherty slipped on the mound during the first inning after delivering a fastball to Chase DeLauder. Manager A.J. Hinch said after Detroit's 3-2 loss that the right-hander felt worse as the game went along. The team said Flaherty has a left peroneal strain. He's allowed 2 runs on 3 hits with 1 walk and 1 strikeout before leaving. He threw 63 pitches, including 39 strikeouts, and left with the Guardians leading 2-1. It is Flaherty's second shortest outing of the season. He went 2 innings and allowed 6 runs in a 9-2 loss to Cincinnati on the 25th of April. Flaherty dropped to 1-8 on the year, has a 5.35 ERA and 15 starts after the Friday outing. They did just activate Schoolboy, as we know, and option right-hand pitcher Ty Madden to Triple-A Toledo. They also recalled infielder Hailu Lee from Triple-A. Another person coming back from the injured list and making their return to Comerica Park for the first time since 2017 is going to be Detroit Tigers right-hander Justin Verlander, who's expected to start against the Chicago White Sox on Sunday at Comerica Park, where he has not pitched for the franchise since 2017. Tigers manager A.J. Hinch made the announcement on Tuesday. Verlander, the oldest active player in the major leagues at 43, was put on the injured list with left hip inflammation in April. And Verlander's only start the season, a 3-time Cy Young winner and 2011 AL MVP, gave up 5 runs and 6 hits in 3 2/3 innings at Arizona and took a loss. He began his career with the Tigers in 2005 and pitched for them until he was traded to Houston at the trade deadline in 2017. He helped the Astros win the World Series in his first season with the franchise and again in 2022. Verlander, whose career record is 266-159, has also played with the Mets and the San Francisco Giants. Also today, the Tigers scratched Colt Keith from the lineup with a sore right wrist against the Astros. 24-year-old Keith hit three home runs and a 9-3 win over the Astros on Monday night. The only player younger than Keith to launch 3 home runs in a game for the franchise was Hall of Fame outfielder Al Kaline, who was 20 when he did it on April 17th, 1955. Colt had only had 1 homer before that game, and he is hitting .267 on the year with 4 homers and 16 RBIs. So now that we're all caught up there, we got to dive into what has happened and what is going to be coming up for this team over the last week and into the next one. Last week, they went, they're just coming off a 2-1 series win over the Twins. Unfortunately, they had a Cleveland game postponed, and they essentially got swept because they lost the first two, 3-2 and 3-1. Both Flaherty and Skubal pick up losses there. As we know, Flaherty got hurt in that Friday game, and there's some other injuries plaguing the team. And then, as we just heard, they came out and they dominated Houston in the first game, 9-3, getting three home runs from Colt Keith and a lot of other help in that game as well for a win. But then they lost the next two, 4-2. So that's what they're going into this weekend. As you know, they played Chicago last night. Skubal on the mound against Fetty. Melton is set to be on the mound against Undecided on the game later today, 1:10 p.m. And then tomorrow, 1:40 p.m., Verlander is set to be on the mound against Martin. All these games are going to be at Comerica Park. And then another series that I'm going to dive deeper into later in the show during our picks is the New York Yankees series, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 6:10 p.m., Valdez versus Rodon, 6:40 p.m., Mize versus Weathers, and 6:40 p.m. again on Prime Video, Skubal versus Schittler. Not sure how you pronounce that. Either way, I'm probably wrong. It doesn't matter because all we care about are the Tigers. And then into the next weekend, you got a four-game weekend series against Houston, 6:40 p.m., Melton versus Burrow, 6:40 p.m., Verlander versus Arrigetti, getting a chance to go against his former squad in Verlander, and then Valdez versus Tang on Saturday at 1:10 p.m., 1:40 p.m. next Sunday. Undecided so far on who will pitch for either of these teams, but I mean, just going off of trends, I would imagine that Skubal is going to be on the mound Sunday for the Tigers. But I mean, it's an uphill battle for them moving forward. White Sox, Yankees, Astros, Yankees, Rangers, it's tough. It's a tough battle, and that's what they're looking at over the next couple of weeks. I think that they can have some success here, but the bats are going to go, and without Gleyber Torres, without Colt Keith, you're really looking uphill, right? You have Skubal back, you have Mize back. Hopefully you can get a lot of help from Verlander as well, but the bats have to go. And that's all we have for the Tigers so far. We'll be back next week to check in on them again. When we come back from the break, we'll be diving into a ton of miscellaneous comments and topics happening in the state of Michigan. With more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Tom.
Back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we're getting ready to dive into what's happening in the college realm for both Michigan and Michigan State as tons of things are happening. Michigan State is in quite the situation as tons of new administration is coming in, and Pat Fitzgerald has weighed in on what is happening. Michigan State is in a bit of a disarray, and that is bleeding into its athletic programs. After turmoil between top administrators in East Lansing and the Board of Trustees, president and athletic directors have left the university. Administration changes have caused a bit of a fuss across Spartan Nation for a good reason. First, men's basketball coach and school legend Tom Izzo has spoke about the problems within a university, which we'll get into in just a moment. But now football coach Pat Fitzgerald has given his reaction to the departure of the president and athletic director. I mean, essentially said, I talked to Tom right away. I told him I'm in a foxhole here, right? And he essentially just says he's got to figure out how to stay the course of what he's kind of been thrown into. He's got to just worry about the football program because he can't have any bearing on what else is going to happen. He then may have to jump ship and adjust everything that has been going on because new leadership has come in and wants to do something different. So he's pretty much just feels like he's in a place of war where he can't do anything but wait. And he's absolutely right. I mean, he's in no position to really stand up and say anything or do a ton about what's going on, but he can just pretty much prepare his team, his coaches, his fans, et cetera, his boosters, alumni, all to understand it might be a rocky season with all of the changes that are happening, not only within the football program, but in the entire institution as a whole. Longtime Michigan State men's basketball coach Tom Izzo said he is disgusted by the on-campus turmoil that led to the departures of the school's president and athletic director. He is challenging the alumni base to do something about it. Izzo spoke to reporters Monday, said the departure of president Kevin to Clemson after 2 years is ridiculous and was fueled by clashes and unrest within the Board of Trustees. 2 weeks after the president departed, Michigan State Athletic Director Jay Batt has left Monday for the same role at Kentucky after only a year in East Lansing. There's other dominoes that get affected when things go wrong like that, Izzo said. I'm very upset about it, and I'm sick of it. Izzo has led the Michigan State men's basketball team since 1995, following 12 years as a Spartan assistant and won a national title in 2000. He called the former president the best president that's ever been here, maybe, and said that his departure stems from what Izzo described as self-inflicted problems. In a letter to the Michigan State community last month following his selection at Clemson, the former president mentioned an unsustainable situation created by differing perspectives among board members, some of whom have criticized major initiatives such as Spartan Ventures, the independent corporation Batt established to boost athletic revenue. At times, too much energy has been spent revisiting past conflicts and eternal disagreements rather than focusing collectively on opportunities and aspirations ahead of us, the former president wrote in his May 27th letter. While I firmly believe we are all better where there is a diversity of viewpoints informing decisions, our ability to make meaningful progress is hampered when disagreements move from offering alternative perspectives into publicly undermining decisions and putting personal interests above the best interests of the university and our faculty, staff, and students. Days before the former president took the Clemson job, Michigan State's trustees voted to strengthen their code of ethics, which included an item about not sharing confidential information with unauthorized people who could disclose it publicly. Trustees Rima Vassar and Mike Ballow voted against the ethics revision and were censored last week. Izzo told reporters that he would have more to say later about the situation, but was visibly upset and repeatedly challenged Michigan State's large alumni base to start rallying together. What happened with our president is ridiculous, Izzo said. He said it, we know the reasons, and I'm ashamed and disgusted, hurt. Spartan Nation better stand up, all 600,000 of them. The former president, who will remain in his role until Michigan State has a plan for an interim president or a permanent successor, said in a statement Monday that he is working on naming an interim athletic director and outlining a search process for Batt's replacement. Former Michigan State Athletic Director Mark Hollis told several media outlets Monday that he would be interested in returning to the role. Hollis served as permanent director of the PGA's Rocket Classic, led Michigan State's athletic department from 2008 until early 2018, when he resigned amid the investigation of Larry Nassar, who was convicted of several crimes that we will not get into here. But yeah, the press conference where he pretty much just lit into everybody, it is real, and it's raw, and it's the kind of things that are going to get in the way of Michigan State having continued success this season and in the future, because they're a great institution for multiple reasons, but things like this will continue to get in the way and make it hard for coaches to bring the athletic prowess back to these types of institutions if these kind of things continue to happen. Speaking of athletic prowess returning to institutions, Michigan's men's basketball seems to be more than just back after winning the national title. They have reloaded, but Coach Dusty May definitely has some concerns, and he talks about his largest concern going into the 26-27 season. The Michigan Wolverines are coming off an historic season. The Wolverines won the Big Ten title and then marched their way to a national title. It was a 37-3 result in the season, and while Michigan is looking for similar results next season, Dusty May will be tasked with replacing some stars. Michigan's big three, consisting of big men Yaxel Lindenborg, Morez Johnson Jr., and Ade Mara, are NBA draft bound, all three to be picked in round one next Tuesday. On top of losing these three bigs, the Wolverines lost veteran role players Namari Burnett, Roddy Gale Jr., and Will Shetter to graduation. Appearing on the Field of 68 podcast, May told Jeff Goodman what his biggest initial concern was with this new team. It's the depth. Proven depth, May told Jeff Goodman. I think depth is important now as ever in college basketball, especially with the tempo we play at. And just looking at our season last year, there were a lot of games that our 6th, 7th, 8th man won for us. They took the game over, and that was the difference in maybe winning 37 versus 30 games or 37 versus 27. I mean, that's how important our bench was and our depth was, and right now we don't have that proven, established depth. Now, I believe in our guys. I think we'll get there. That's probably the biggest question mark in my mind. And then are we going to have the competitive stamina to take the shots that we're going to take this year. Starting this year as a national champion, as all the things that go with that, as far as the sellouts, the t-shirts, the big game on everyone's schedule, Can we have that competitive spirit for that amount of time and have that type of stamina? You know, that's a lot easier said than done. It's never easy replacing a roster, especially one that just won a national title, but May and company were selective of who they brought in. On top of landing one of the top recruiting classes, headlined by five-star guard Brandon McCoy Jr. and four-star big man Quinn Costello, Michigan was able to land three big men via the portal. JP Estrella from Tennessee, Mustafa Thiam from Cincinnati, and Jalen Reed from LSU will fill those needs. Thiam is a top shot blocker who has reliable three-point shot. Estrella is a physical down low, can rebound, and can also shoot. And Reed, if he can get fully healthy, is very athletic and can play multiple positions for the Wolverines. However, it's going to take time for this talented group to gel. Both Elliot Cadeau and Trey McKinney are back to lead the team, and role players Oscar Goodman and Ricky Labard are expected to take on bigger roles. Those four will have to guide the newcomers and allow them to learn the Michigan way. Speaking of the Michigan way, a potential NCAA rule change, which is likely going to pass, could help them get one of their Michigan way guys back. It could change everything for their 26-27 basketball season, and one that could make the Wolverines a real contender to win back-to-back NCAA titles. The NCAA Division I cabinet could vote on the 5-for-5 rule change next week, which means each player could have 5 years of eligibility and traditional red shirts would no longer be in play. Each player's 5-year eligibility clock will start upon full-time enrollment at their respective college or at the beginning of the academic year following their 19th birthday, whichever would come first. Now, how does this change things for Michigan? Well, their guard, LJ Kaysen, was arguably the top 6 man in the nation last season until he suffered a torn ACL against Illinois late in the season. Not only ended his 25-26 campaign, but also he announced that he was going to redshirt for the 26-27 season. However, if this rule change, if it were to go through, it will allow Kaysen to return to the court later in the season, essentially because he wouldn't have a choice. He would lose the year regardless. So if he's able to play, he would push through and decide to play as long as his recovery process goes as planned. Tearing his ACL and having surgery, Kaysen could return in February ahead of both the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament, giving Michigan extra ammunition. Talking to the Wolverine, Kaysen said that's something he has thought of and his desire would be to play, assuming his body would allow him to. Yeah, we've definitely thought about that, Kaysen told the Wolverines. Since that has been reported to be likely to pass, me and the staff have talked. I'm sure by the time February comes, we'll have a plan. Michigan has compiled a roster that should be able to compete for another Big Ten title, along with making another deep run in the NCAA tournament. But if there are any holes in the roster, it's who is going to play backup to Elliot Cadeau. Before Kaysen emerged as a late possibility, we would assume that Trey McKinney could slide over and handle the duties along with incoming five-star guard Brandon McCoy Jr. if needed. But if Kaysen could return, that would give Michigan the spark it would need when tasked to make a tournament run. The 6'2 rising junior averaged 8.4 points off the bench, giving the Wolverines 2.4 assists per game. Kaysen was a spark plug and someone who can make plays with or without the ball in his hands. When Cadeau needed a breather, Kaysen was ideal to come in and give Michigan solid minutes. Michigan is going to have his rotation in place by February, but Dusty May would love to have the problem of figuring Kaysen back into the equation. Now looking at the NBA draft, the Warriors are highly impressed by a Michigan prospect. The 25-26 NBA season has officially concluded. The Golden State Warriors are already looking to plan for the NBA draft. The team suffered several roster issues last season, and the front office will aim to plug those loopholes before the next season. The most glaring of all, an efficient wing. However, the team management and the scouts have found a solution to the issue. It's Jaxo Landenborg, the American Dominican forward who played for the Michigan Wolverines, averaged 15.1 points, 6.8 rebounds, and 1.2 blocks in his last NCAA season. He shot 37.2% from deep, which shows his ability to play like a plug-and-play two-way wing. As per ESPN, the Warriors summoned the forward, showcasing their interest in acquiring the 23-year-old if he remains to be picked at the 11th spot. Even though the team's have multiple options in this year's stacked draft class, an efficient defensive wing might be all they need. After he worked out with the Warriors and impressed the team management, the team source said the fit is so obvious. After the Warriors traded Jonathan Kuminga during the midseason trade period, the franchise was in dire need of a perimeter shooter who could help space the offense with Stephen Curry. They brought in Kristaps Porzingis for that, but he did not have a similar offensive production. So they will say they're going to try and slot Landenborg in there. They also gave the stamp of approval to Landenborg's place in the roster. He did not expect the 6'7 forward to be able to be available in the 11th place. But if he's there, they're going to take him. That is all we got for now on Michigan and Michigan State. When we come back from the break, WNBA update, NBA, NHL finals before we get into our picks. But that's after, you know, the little break. And we're going to be back with more Mid Madness here on 95.3.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, one in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, here on 95.3 The Ticket. We've got an update on the WNBA to dive into. The interest in the WNBA continues to increase, and the league is eager to meet the market with more games. Starting in 2027, the WNBA will move to a 50-game season, up from the current 44-game schedule. The expanded footprint was allowed under the dynamic new collective bargaining agreement, which also vastly increased pay, secured a $2.2 billion media deal, and slated six expansion teams to join the league between 2024 and 2030. The new structure extends the season's end to no later than November 21st and 27 and November 30th starting in 28, nearly a month beyond the previous limit of October 31st. The league also has the option to expand to 52 regular season games beginning in 2029. Demand for the WNBA has never been greater, and expanding to a 50-game regular season reflects the extraordinary momentum we are seeing across the league, Commissioner Kathy Engelbert said in a statement. This move reflects our commitment to growing the game and creating more opportunities for fans to watch the best players in the world and experience the extraordinary talent and competition that define the WNBA. The 50-game season will be the most games played in league history, after starting with just 28 games in 97 and increasing to 44 games in 2025. The 26th regular season began on May 8th and will conclude September 24th. The last date for a finals game will be October 31st. I mean, I'm really excited about this. For one, Detroit is getting a team in 29, so there's a chance that they will have 52 regular season games, which means 26 regular season games in Detroit. That's an amazing opportunity to see fantastic women's basketball. And even if you're not going to go see the Detroit team, Chicago has a team, Indiana has a team. Hey, I don't care. Fly out to Vegas and go see the Aces play. The WNBA has been so exciting for years, and now we're finally getting to see it at a longer rate. What does this also mean? The more games they play, the more opportunity it is to sell tickets, the more merch that gets sold, the more concessions, the more money the WNBA makes, which, oh, ding, 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 the more money the players make, which they have been asking for forever. They deserve it because of how hard they're working, but they have to bring the revenue up, and this is a great step into bringing the revenue up. You have to make the game more exciting, which I think they are continuing to do, allowing the players to be more expressive, allowing them to be themselves, and they're out in the media more, which has been phenomenal. But once you get people in the door, you have to keep them in the door, and one way to do that is to create more opportunities for them to go. When you have a short season, it's hard for people to go because then they're squeezing everything in and deciding if they have enough to do. But when you give them more opportunities, there's a chance they're going to make it to at least one game. And also, the people who are really rocking with you, they're going to keep coming to more games because now they have more games to come to. Expanding to 50 games is phenomenal. And starting in the upcoming season, perfect play. Now we're going to see more games against similar teams. We're also going to see more rivalries start to form. I think it's fantastic for the WNBA and where they're going. Only a matter of time, because obviously we have to wait to see what happens. But I think it's going to be great for the league. Speaking of the league, the NBA, their season has concluded due to the Knicks. The Knicks did it. They won in five games. They took down the Spurs in game five back on Saturday, last Saturday, 94-90. I mean, they made quick work of the Spurs in this NBA Finals. Many people already, you know, all over Wemby and saying what he should and shouldn't have done. Jalen Brunson, though, was the MVP, as many people saw. 45 points, 14-27 from the field, 13-15 from the free throw line. Josh Hart with 11 rebounds. Miles Bridges, 4 assists in 39 minutes with no turnovers. 36, 32, 71 in the splits. 14 turnovers, 48 rebounds. Led for 10% of the game, largest lead being just 4, but that's all they needed to close things out in the Frostbank Center in San Antonio, Texas. Dylan Harper is going to be a star in the NBA. I said it 3 times so that it actually clicks for you all. This kid is special. 25 points, 10 and 19 from the field, 3 of 6 from the free throw line. Victor Wembanyama with 14 rebounds. De'Aaron Fox, 5 assists, 1 turnover in 37 minutes. 38, 32, 63 in the splits. 13 turnovers, 47 rebounds, led for 84% of the game, their largest lead being 16, and they let the Knicks crawl back in. The comeback Knicks came back so many times, not in this series, but in several series throughout this playoffs and several games throughout the regular season, and crawled their way to a championship, their first in decades. I repeat, decades. And they've been partying like it. Congratulations to the Knicks and all the Knicks fans out there. I'm really excited for the draft, really excited for the offseason, and hopefully the Pistons can get back to where they were this season, and hopefully we can see them get some help in free agency / the draft that's going to help them advance within the playoffs. But speaking of the draft, now that the regular season is over, the draft is the next turn, and they have gone through all 60 picks in rounds 1 and 2 to decide where people will go. We'll run through the entire first round because that's what everybody really cares about. Then we'll only hit the important picks in the second round. A.J. DeBonta going at 1 to the Wizards. Utah Jazz taking Darren Peterson at 2. Memphis Grizzlies at 3 with Cameron Boozer. Caleb Wilson goes 4 to the Bulls. The Clippers take Keaton Wagler at 5. The Brooklyn Nets take Darius Acuff Jr. at 6. The Kings take Michael Brown Jr. at 7. The Hawks take Flemings at 8. The Mavericks will take Brandon Burries at 9. Nate Amet to the Bucks at 10. Ade Mara to the Golden State Warriors at 11. Yaxel Lannenborg to the Thunder at 12. Merez Johnson to the Heat at 13. Kareem Lopez to the Hornets at 14. Hans Steinbach to the Bulls at 15. Christian Anderson to the Grizzlies at 16. LeBron Filon Jr. to the Thunder at 17. Cameron Carr to the Hornets at 18. Chris Sanok Jr. to the Raptors at 19. Allen Graves to the Spurs at 20. Bennett Sturts to the Pistons at 21. Sturts has a number of top 20 teams interested in him, but it's unclear in which order the second wave of point guards will go and where it will start, creating scenarios in which one or two of them will slip. His ability to organize in the half court and keep defenses honest with his shot helps his case to play immediately, but his age of 22 and average athletic ability will make him more specific fit for teams. Rival teams expect the Pistons to target an offensive-minded player here, with Detroit's glaring need for shooting coming to bear in the postseason. Adding a ball handler who can take pressure off of Cade Cunningham might also be prudent. Dalen Swain going to the 76ers at 22. Isaiah Evans going to the Hawks at 23. Henry Vissar going to the Knicks at 24. Jaden Quinnitz going to the Lakers at 25. Kawhi Pete going to the Nuggets at 26. Malik Thomas going to the Celtics at 27. Ibeka Okori going to the Timberwolves at 28. Terrence Reed Jr. going to the Cavaliers at 29. And Sergio Dellaria going to the Mavericks at 30. The Knicks picking up Alex Caraban at 31. Braden Smith going to the Bulls at 38. Jaden Bradley going to the Suns at 47. Nick Martinelli going to the Knicks at 55. Kylan Boswell going to the Bulls at 56. And that is all that is notable for this draft. So that's kind of how they see it playing out. There's no guarantee that that's how that will go. But, I mean, I don't like the Pistons pick personally. I would have gone with someone else. But we'll see also who falls and who's available and who they actually decide to pick. But I don't think Braden Smith is the move. I would say I would touch on the NHL Finals for a second. Carolina did the thing. They won it in six. They went on the road and took down the Vegas Golden Knights 3-0. And they win the Stanley Cup 4-2. They will forever go down as the 25-26 Stanley Cup champions. When we come back from the break, we will touch on our picks with more Mid Madness here on 95.3. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. Time to get into my favorite segment of the show. It's the pick segment. And yes, you can play right along with us using the chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app. I always load up six games, matchups, contests for the week. And then I deliberate, I do research, I talk about how I know so much about ball and why I'm going to be right. And I tell you who I think or who I believe is going to win. And then we see if I'm actually right or not. But the cool thing is, like I said, you can play along using the chat feature in 95.3 The Ticket app. Write down those same games. Go do your own research, your own deliberation. Figure out why you know ball better than I do. And then submit those picks into the chat feature on the 95.3 The Ticket app. And if you do better than I do, we might have a little something special for you. You know, Jacob tried back when he was here 3 different times. He tied me once, but he came up unsuccessful 2 times in a row. He lost to me twice and tied once. So I'm still technically undefeated in this picks game. So if you got the runs and you think you're better than me, let's see it in the chat feature. Last week was not that great of a week for me. I went 2-4. I got the Dream picking a dub up over the Tempo, so that was nice. And the Kings did win the UFL championship, so congratulations to them after they took down the Defenders. But the Vegas Golden Knights, they lost it in Game 6. The Spurs lost it in Game 5. Those are both L's for me. The Lynx could not get a dub over the Aces, picked up another loss there, and somehow the Wings dropped the game to the Fire. So 4 losses, 2 wins, improves my overall record to 56-51-1 coming into this week. And we're going right back to the hardwood, starting with, of course, the WNBA, because that's all that's left. The Indiana Fever, who are 9-5, 3-3 on the road, are traveling to take on the Atlanta Dream, who are 9-4 and 4-2 at home. This game is 1 p.m. on later today, ABC. It's going to be State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. The Dream have a 58.7% chance to win, a 41.3% chance for the Fever. The Fever have a game-time decision with Caitlin Clark, who may or may not be back for this game. Aaliyah Nye and Brianna Jones are both out with knee injuries for the Dream. And Aaliyah Nye is eligible to return on the 20th, but we'll see if she does. Their first matchup between the two, the Fever took 83-71 in Indiana back on June 4th. In the last 5, Indiana's on a 4-game win streak. Their lone loss is to New York, 83-75. They beat the Mystics. They beat the Sky in overtime and then beat the Sun and the Tempo. Meanwhile, for the Dream, they lost to the Fever way back, as we know. Then they lost to the Liberty, who are beating basically everybody. And then they beat the Mystics, the Sky, and the Tempo. And they beat the Mystics and Tempo by large margins. The Fever, not so much. Although I want to go with Fever because they're on a 4-game win streak. After that large win by the Dream and the fire that came from that game, which we'll talk about a little bit later for another reason, I got them winning. I'm still going to take the Dream there. I really like what they have this season, and they play well when they're at home. So I'm going to take the Dream to win that one as well. The Valkyries from Golden State are 10-5, 3-3 on the road. They're taking on the Las Vegas Aces, 11-4, 3-2 at home. It's a 4 p.m. game on CBS and Paramount Plus. Vegas Aces, 67.8% chance to win. Valkyries, 32.2% chance. It will be at Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Trinity Carter, Janaya Barker, and Dana Evans all out. Game time decision for Kennedy Carter with an illness. Baker, a leg injury. Evans, a leg injury as well. And then Valkyries, no significant injuries for them. The Valkyries are 4-1 in their last five. Their last loss was to the Aces on the 6th. They beat the Mercury, the Storm, the Sparks, and the Wings since then. The Aces are also 4-1 in their last five. Their lone loss, a 30-point loss to the Wings, but they have wins over the Storm, the Fire, the Lynx, and the Mercury. I mean, this one's very, very hard to pick, although the Aces are 2-0 against the Valkyries this season. 91-81 win back on May 31st and an 84-79 win back on the 6th of June. I'm going to pick them to go for the sweep. I mean, 2-0, they're feeling good about themselves. They feel like they have the Valkyries figured out, and they're at home. So it's hard to say they're not going to win where they play well already. I'm going to take the Aces to go ahead and sweep the Valkyries in the season series this year, which is now going to get us over into a game I would love to talk about. The Toronto Tempo, who are 7-8, 3-5 on the road, are taking on the Atlanta Dream, 9-4, 4-2 on the road. I know that the Dream just blew out the Tempo, and this doesn't seem like a game worth picking. But at the same time, did you happen to see that game and how feisty it got? Angel Reese got emotional after she was took a hard foul that ended up being a flagrant too. Her and Brittany Sykes got into it. This now is starting to feel like an early rivalry that is building between the Toronto Tempo and the Atlanta Dream. So if there's any kind of fuel I can add to that fire, I'm definitely going to do it. I think that both these teams are going to come out remembering that game from not too long ago and wanting to kind of show that they are the better team. And if they're ready to throw bows, they're going to throw bows. There's going to be a lot of aggression, hard-fought battles, and it may be some hard fouls in this game, too. I'm ready for the attitudes to come out in State Farm Arena, where the Dream have a 79.1% chance to win at home. The Tempo, 20.9% chance to win this game. Brittany Sykes is a game-time decision with a foot injury. Nayara Sabali is out with a hamstring injury. Kiki Rice still out with an ankle injury. So a lot going on for the Tempo there. And like I said, 102-77, the first win in the series for the Atlanta Dream. This is the second game out of four for these two. But I'm going to take the Dream to win this one as well. Have them going 2-0 so far on the week. The next game in the WNBA, the New York Liberty, who are 11-4, 5-1 on the road, are taking on the Las Vegas Aces, who are 11-4, 3-2 at home. They're giving the Liberty a 43.6% chance to win. The Aces a 56.4% chance. It will be at Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Benaija Laney Hamilton is a game time decision with a knee injury, so we'll see if she returns by then. The Liberty are on an 8-game winning streak, though. It's hard to pick anybody to go against them. They're currently second in the league, tied with Vegas, obviously. Minnesota is the only team that sits above them at 12-3. But when you're led by the likes of Breonna Stewart and Jonquel Jones, the only people who could really give you a run for your money are Asia Wilson and Chelsea Gray. So I think this is going to be an absolute battle. I think this is going to come down to which team decides to show up and say that they are the better team and kind of just, you know, drop it on the table and walk away with this one. I'm liking the Liberty here, though. Something sticks out to me about 5-1 on the road. They like playing on the road. They like going and ruining teams' nights when they are the home team, and they want to come out and continue to assert that dominance on the road. So I'm going to take them to improve that road record to 6-1. Our last game within the WNBA is going to be the Atlanta Dream once again back on the docket, taking on the Golden State Valkyrie. Valkyrie's 49.2% chance to win, a 50.8% chance for Atlanta. Valkyries are led by Gabby Williams, Kayla Thornton, and Veronica Burden, pretty much a three-headed monster there. Jordan Canada, Angel Reese, and Alicia Gray, the three-headed monster on the other side. Chase Center in San Francisco, California is going to be booming. This is the first time these two teams will meet up this season, and we know that both of them have had some recent success and are looking to continue all of the success that they possibly can. And as much as I would love to have the Dream have a perfect 3-0 week, I think that's tough, especially when you're going on the road against a team like Valkyries, who are 7-2 when they play at the Chase Center. Yeah, you heard that right. 7-2 when they're playing at home in San Francisco. I don't know if I can go against that. I'm going to take Golden State to win at home. Give me the Valkyries over the Dream. That ends what we got going for WNBA for the week. But we're going to pull in the MLB. Three-game series going on early next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, for the Detroit Tigers. They're welcoming in the New York Yankees, who are atop of the American League. This is the first of six games this year. The second series will be on the road later this month, June 29th, 30th, and July 1st. But the first three games are going to be at Comerica Park. The Monday game, a 56.9% chance for the Yankees, 43.1% chance for the Tigers. They're putting Carlos Rodon against Valdez. Rodon, a 3.50 ERA, 1.25 whip, and 36 innings pitched, 25 hits given up, 41 strikeouts, only 20 walks, and 3 homers given up. We know the numbers for Valdez. He's 81 hits, 67 strikeouts, 32 walks, 9 home runs, and 83.2 innings. We already, and 1.35 whip, but we know how high his ERA is, as he's 3-5 on the year. That's a 6-10 first pitch. Game two is a 6:40 first pitch on Tuesday. 51% chance for the Yankees, 49% chance for the Tigers. Ryan Weathers going against Casey Mize. Weathers 2-5 on the year, 4.36 ERA, 1.17 whip, 74.1 innings pitched, 66 hits, 81 strikeouts, 21 walks, and 15 homers. Meanwhile, for Mize, he's 2-4, a 2.58 ERA, 1.01 whip, with 40 hits, 52 strikeouts, 13 walks, 3 home runs, and 52.1 innings pitched. In game three for the Tigers, 56.2% chance for the Yankees, 43.8% chance for the Tigers. Cam Schindler going against Tarek Skubal. Schindler is 7-3. 1.82 ERA, 0.91 whip, 89 innings pitched, 63 hits, 96 strikeouts, 18 walks, 5 home runs. Skubal, on the other hand, 3-3, 2.81 ERA, 0.98 whip, 40 hits, 49 strikeouts, 7 walks, and 3 home runs, and 48 innings pitched. This one's a tough one for me. As much as I would love to pick the Tigers, as they have started to get things back, losing Gleyber Torres, possibly Colt Keith, and many others is somewhat of a struggle for me. The pitching will continue to go well, but I'm not sure the bats are enough to compete with the league-leading Yankees. So I'm going to take the Yankees to win this series as well. That gives me the Dream, Aces, Dream, Liberty, Valkyries, and Yankees for the week. When we come back next week, we'll have tons more Michigan action to talk to you about. Make sure you continue to listen to your Tigers action here on 95.3 The Ticket, as we get you more Mid-Madness later on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.